some people say I have the most complete set of audiences in the country, if not the entire planet. And because this is such a small, intimate group, I would like to actually take a photograph of you doing something. Now, this is relevant. This is relevant. Remember that sound, because I'm going to come back to this sound. If you could, I have to do it. I don't have a wide-angle lens, so if we could, I'll start with this side. Could you just do the Japanese bunny ears to the person in front of you, please, or the person beside you? You'll get paid. All right. Very good. Thank you. Go. Great. And if I don't want the bunny ears. No, you want to do the bunny ears. I know you want to do the bunny ears.
Something much more fun than that.
What I would like this side, I would like a look of abject horror, as if you've just seen something really horrifying. And imagine that Jake just stood up on the table and flashed himself. That's a bad image. You won't be able to keep a straight face if I do that. Right, so abject horror. One, you can do the hands. That sounds good. One, two, three. Great.
Very convincing.
Yes.
I really feel like I should be doing something. I like to strip down to my underwear.
No, please, but also I get to tell you why I do this. I think I mentioned this a few years ago in Harrogate, but a lot of my books deal with the supernatural. And as part of research for this supernatural, I became quite friendly with our local shaman in Chiang Mai. And the shaman actually specializes in photographs. So if your wife runs off with another man, you take a photograph of your wife to the shaman, and he does a thing with his finger and puts a curse on your wife. And it's great with audiences, because if anybody lets their mobile phone ring during the performance, or if at the end of it you put up your hand and ask a really silly question, don't be surprised if you wake up with feathers growing out of the back of your head, because you're going to be cursed for doing these things. And that was going to be the end. I'm not the kind of person who dominates these panels, but in the green room I was just reminded of something that I'd like to tell you. It was it's relevant to my collection of audiences. I used to teach graduate students in Chiang Mai in the university, and I liked to mess with their heads. And I had three audience photographs taken in three different continents. And I thought what fun it would be to Photoshop a small, mysterious, grey-haired woman into the back row of each of those photographs. I changed the expression on her face. She was sitting in a different position, but it was definitely the same woman. And I passed these photographs around to my students, waiting for the reaction. And the Thais like the ghost stories, and they like ghost photographs. And inevitably there was like, oh! And I said, what's wrong, dear? And she said, in this photograph, there's this woman, and it's taken on a different date, different year, different country, but the same woman is sitting in two of the photographs. And I said, well, keep looking. And she passed it to the man beside her, and he said, sure, absolutely. The same woman is sitting in two of these photographs. And I rushed over, and I picked up the third photograph, and she was gone. The woman wasn't in the photograph. Now, either I'd printed out the wrong photograph that morning, or she disappeared. Mm-hmm. So there's me trying to get my students upset. And actually, for three nights, I didn't sleep, and I keep turning on the light to see if the other two women were still there. And I don't do that again. No, that was the last time I...
We'll see if she pops up in the audience.
It's funny you should say
that. And do you encounter many shamans in Belfast?
Yes.
Do I have a number of shamans in Belfast? No, not really.
Okay. So, let's talk for a moment about
meaning.
Yeah. So, I think I will call you Colin, and you Bateman, if you don't think that. Because in 2007, you published a novel called I Predict a Liar, and you dedicated it to, I quote, my Christian name gone but not forgotten. And since then, you are just marketed as Bateman for Colin. Yeah. Were there focus groups telling your publishers that people didn't want to buy thrillers written by someone called Colin?
I think Colin probably isn't really an action sort of name. I think
I object.
This is a bit weak. And I also think Bateman on the front cover of a book, if you're walking through a bookshop and your eye gets caught, just at the corner of your eye, it looks a bit like Batman.
Yeah.
So I think that was the reason. But it seems to have worked. So.
finding notes to myself that I've written, Colin, write something funny in here. eventually I do think of something funny, but I have so many gaps to fill in with jokes that it takes a long time to be funny, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Do people expect you to be funny?
They do, and they're invariably disappointed. Like our panel on Friday, you know, the four funniest writers in the country, and did we get a laugh out of anybody? No.
Well, I did.
Yeah, we did.
And do you make yourself laugh out loud when you're writing?
No, that was too mad. I think once in a book, I would maybe laugh out loud if I knew I nailed something really well, but no, you didn't just type them.
I do, but I drink a lot of red wine when I'm writing, so it's mostly you get to the stage where you laugh at it really loudly in that night, and the next morning you read it again, you can't find the bit that was funny. And it wasn't in the book, it was something completely different. I should have to stop drinking.
Bateman, your three most recent novels.
That doesn't sound right.
So this is Mr. Bateman.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I was a child, it was Master Bateman, which is
I think we may come on to a similar subject in a moment. So I was going to ask you.
Yeah, it's going to get very personal.
Your three most recent novels have had as hero the owner of a crime fiction bookshop in Belfast called No Alibi. In the first book, he finds people drifting into the shop because the private eye firm next door is closed down, and he ends up getting involved in taking on people's cases. Now, there is an actual shop in Belfast called No Alibi, and it was in there that you had the idea for the first book, didn't you?
But I'd actually written one of my Dan Starkey books called Driving Big Davy, and what I always launched the book in No Alibis, or launched my books in No Alibis, and I always read the first chapter. But the first chapter on this occasion was almost entirely about masturbation. And I just couldn't beat it out because my mother-in-law was in the audience and she's born again Christian. So I ended up making up the short story with the fictitious owner of the shop starring in it. I cleared it with him, and the one thing he said to me was, do anything you want with the owner, the character, me, but don't make me feel bad. Too many instructions, so I've got carte blanche to do what I want with him.
And he hasn't complained about your bringing his shop or him into disrepute?
No, but what he finds is that because the character in the book is, you know, a real hypochondriac and has various mental issues, what he finds is that a lot of people just come into the shop to look at him. And they also buy their books in the likes of Tesco's and take them in to get them signed in his bookshop, which, you know, he's struggling to survive as a bookseller, and people can't think.
And just the very last question about masturbation, but Mark Billingham says that he is not allowed, his publishers tell him, that his hero could never have masturbated in the book. And do your publishers ever say...
No, they encourage it.
Yeah.
I know, I don't get any instructions on that. That would just be a very weird phone call to get.
But there's nothing they never said this has gone too far. And you can take this out.
No, well, if it was every chapter, that would be scary. But
what about you? Did you get
it wasn't, not masturbation, because I don't put a lot of masturbation in my book. Most of my characters are over 70, so it doesn't come up. but I have problems with any Americans in the audience. Yeah, we have some Americans here. I have problems with Americans because evidently you can't remember a name over two syllables. locked door mystery where everybody's in this one hotel and surrounded by smoke. And of course, the interaction between the Americans, and it's the first chance I've had to have interaction. And the problems that come up are the translation problems, because they can't speak to each other directly, but do I spend the whole book having an interpreter for every conversation, or do I just assume that the interpreter's there? And do you have, you know, when you have Irish conversations with English people?
No.
No.
I presume
that's
book Irish. Okay, and tell us about this hero, the unnamed hero in your last three novels, who is not really a typical hard man action hero in any way. Tell us a bit more about him.
Well, he's the unreliable narrator, really, because you don't quite know if he's telling the truth. And also, he's completely unedited. You know, his thoughts just come out, and that's probably more a reflection of real life on me, probably. But no, he's not a hero. He's a coward, manic depressive. I haven't really got much going for him.
It sounds like fun. Should we get a copy?
Yeah, it is fun. You should read it. But he says he's a member of the support group for people depressed because they've been rejected by their corny transplant. He's constantly.
Yeah, and that's actually very close to the truth. It's the real owner who does help.
But
so there is a blurring of fiction.
But it's not easy. We're constantly in his head. It's not easy to make someone very sympathetic. And,
well, I think if they're funny, you can get away with that. I hope it is.
And your new book, Colin, you have a female journalist protagonist, heroine, called Ginger Reed. And just one thing about her, she has an unusual academic background because she's at university, she studied a course on the rhetoric of George W. Bush.
That's true.
And this is where the title of the book comes from.
The title of the book was abbreviated from something like terrorists are... Did you have it written down?
Not that one, no.
Terrorists are devious people who kill at the whim of a hat. So the book is called Killed at the Whim of a Hat. And therefore, I had to find a suitable title for every chapter. And there's some of my favorites. One of the first chapters is, I honestly believe that man and fish can coexist peacefully. So this is Alfred, my fish. And every chapter is relevant to the contents of the chapter. But George has actually done a great service for me in the book. I think in the States already, it's not even published in the States, but... There's a big queue on Amazon to get it, and I think it's because of George W. Bush, not because of me.
So you think the Bush fans who buy it are going to be pleased?
I don't think they can read. So
not anymore, okay. So tell us a bit more about Ginger Reed.
Alright, well, about 4 years ago, my wife and I moved from the city down to a very small fishing village on the Gulf of Siam. And it's a place where really nothing happens. It's so safe that the police station doesn't even have a jail attached to it because there's no crime. And the police officers are actually at the end of the road. When in Thailand, police officers are usually transferred to inactive posts when they do something wrong. They don't get sacked, they get moved along. And this is the end of that line. So our 15 police officers are all people who have very serious mental problems, and the one guy wears a toupee that doesn't stick to his head, and there's a gay policeman there, and there's a person who's so old that I can't believe they keep him in the police station. And that's our local police force, but they don't have any crime to look into. And so I felt obliged to give them crimes through my book. And so I, for the first 3 months, I was interviewing the police and interviewing the teachers and the school and the doctor to get background information for this area. And the first book, it's all made up. Everything's made up. But the more I interviewed people, the more dirt I dug, I realized that there were so many hidden secrets and so many disgusting and terrible things happening in our little village that I'm afraid to actually go out in after dark now. And for example, the couple that run the greengrocer's shop at the end of our lane, it's a very stereotypical little old man and little old lady. And I would buy my vegetables there and say hello. I found out from don't read.